Good morning. While we can still say morning, I appreciate Danny for leading that song by request. And I will entertain a motion right now to cede my 15 minutes to Brother Pointer. I appreciate that, Brother Pointer, and you gave me a good segue. If you choose to look at your agenda, you're going to find something very odd. I don't preach anywhere. Never been a preacher, never trained a preacher. I sat through a lot of preaching. Slept through something. No. There was a commercial in the 70s. Now, it was for a beverage that we don't like to talk about and none of us partake in. But the guy goes, "I still don't know why they asked me to do this commercial." Well, that's sort of me right now. I still don't know why they asked me here. I'm a police chief. I've been a police chief for the last 14 years in Abingdon. Been a member of the church all my life. Member in Abingdon the last 14 years. I do a good bit of public speaking, but it's always in context. In the police academy, people are soaking up what you tell them, because if they get it wrong, they do push-ups or run laps. Or the other context is I'm in a room full of constituents who aren't listening or believing to anything that you say. So this is sort of an odd place to be. I appreciate the invitation, and thank you very much for the confidence. When I go through this who's who on the agenda, it's amazing. It's amazing, and it's a tremendous honor to be here. But I'm here to talk about the arena of work. The work arena. Oftentimes, we sometimes put Christianity in our back pocket. And I want us to get out of that. I don't want this to be a negative. I want us to get out of that. Now, because I'm not a great speaker and I have a terrible memory, you're going to see some prompts up here. So you can follow along up here. Everything that we talk about is not there. There are some good abilities to take notes. And, of course, as always, y'all sit down, right? Oh, okay. Very beautiful. Because of my field, this quote has always spoke to me. Remember, we work for God. Now, it's sort of odd where this quote originated. These are the words of Lieutenant Commander retired Vernon Gebirth. He was a homicide detective, homicide commander, New York City Police Department in the Bronx. His unit worked over 400 murders a year. In fact, Lieutenant Commander Gebirth is sometimes referred to as Mr. Murder. Now, that's a nice name to have. Because of his work, because of the study, because of the number of books that he authored, many of which I have, dealing with the topic, best practices, how we can solve somebody's death. In an interview one time, and please forgive me while I read, someone asked Mr. Gebirth how come he took his craft so seriously, and he said, "Death investigation is a heavy responsibility, and as such, no person, system, nor circumstance should deter you from the truth and your own personal commitment to see that justice is done, not only for the deceased, but for the surviving family as well. This is why my personal philosophy as a murder cop is always remember, we work for God." Although we are in differing professions, isn't that the attitude that we should have? Isn't that what the segue that Brother Pointer gave me when he finished? Remember, we work for God. Oftentimes, we sort of lose sight of that. And let's quickly jump to some scripture. Matthew 5, 14 through 16. You know what it says. I'm going to hit some highlights. But you know, the part I'm going to hit is how personal this is. You. First word in the sentence. You are the light of the world. You. And then we move down. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. This is a mission statement. This is a mission statement for us as Christians each day when we leave the house. This is the mission statement that we should have in our hands, we should have in our heads, and we should have in our hearts as we walk through the work door each day. Now, this includes the arena of work. It didn't stop. He didn't say, do this for your family, do this for your kids, do this at home, do this at work. Work is a neat place, isn't it? You know, here's a recent study from people ages 25 through 54. The amount of time we spend at work, we spend 8.9 hours of our work day at work. That's more time than you spend at home. Well, not really, but you spend about 8 of those sleeping. You spend more time with the people you work with during the week than you do with your families. But often we focus on shedding our influence where? At home, as opposed to in the place where we're standing, which is the work arena. And I know there are some difficulties with that, and we'll talk about those. But the work environment is a strange place. Using the chart above, you'll see these different and often conflicting environments that sometimes overlap. You have your personal values and ethics. You have those in the policies of your profession. You have the general state of the economy, where you work or your profession and how that's going. If you go broader, you've got a national picture to look at. And then finally, you've got the world as a whole. And we survive in all those environments. We have to recognize that things that work well in the environment on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday evening, or days like today, sometimes don't translate as well Monday through Friday. It's just different. We're dealing with different folks. Why is the singing so good in here this morning? Because we're all like-minded folks. We're all trying to get to the same place. Why is the audience so attentive? We're all like-minded folks. We're all trying to get to the same place. Work, it's a little different. Most of us do not work in environments where we could start the day with prayer, or we could start with a prayer, with a song, or we could start with a meditative thought from the Bible. The work environment, unfortunately, causes us to do that stuff often before we leave the house, instead of doing it once we get there. The workplace, though, is ripe for Christianity. If you think about where you work, and I don't care what your profession is, it's a weird place. There are different opinions there, aren't there? There are different dangers there. There are different opinions there. There are different relationships there, and there's different opinions there. There are different opportunities at work, and there's also differing opinions there. There are different emotions there, and there's differing opinions there. We've got to deal with a lot of folks' opinions when we walk into the workplace. And oftentimes that affects our behavior. It causes us to do or say things a little differently sometimes. Now I know, you're sitting there going, Tony, you've missed 2 Timothy 4:2. You've missed it altogether. Because that's our mission statement as Christians. And how many times have we heard that? 2 Timothy 4:2, preach the word, be ready in season and out of season. Sometimes I think we get these next two words great. Convince and rebuke. We've got those down, I really believe, especially in the work environment. Convince and rebuke. Because you know what? If we disagree with somebody religiously, we're going to convince them one way or another. And if we can't convince them, we're going to do the next thing. We're going to rebuke them one way or the other. The next three words in that verse sometimes are lost. And I'm just as guilty as anyone else. Exhort. Encourage. Instead of arguing, how about encouraging? With all long-suffering, how patient do we get for religious arguments in the workplace or religious conversations? None. As soon as someone disagrees, we often turn the switch off and go, well, you're going to have your opinion, and I'm going to have mine, and you're walking away thinking, and I'm going to heaven, and you're not. No, that's not long-suffering. That's short-sighted. That's not long-suffering. Long-suffering and teaching. I get it. I understand, and that's where we need to be. We can't use this scripture, however, as we've used it often, as a hammer. Sometimes we beat people over the head with this one, and that's tough. There are times that we can seize opportunities to teach, and we need to grab those as quickly as we can. There are other times that we can't, and you know what? We have to sit back every now and then and sort of let the pot simmer, and let's wait for the next opportunity to come along. However, we can't come across as totally inflexible and totally dogmatic, because that really goes into the face of what Romans 12 tells us to do. Romans 12, there's spiritual gifts, the gifts that we've given. Oftentimes we think Romans 12 doesn't apply because there's one word in there, the very first gift that we get says prophecy. And we go, we don't prophesy today. That ended. We can't do that. And that sort of says, well, you know, Romans 12 really doesn't apply in modern times because we don't prophesy. I'm going to take huge issue with that. Because if we translate prophecy into our word, we'd use the word perception. And you all used your perception to get here this morning. Every one of you drove, or most of you did. And so you were using the acts of perception. You were taking the environment around you, and you were watching the sometimes you call them idiots, around you, try to operate their vehicles, and you navigated here safely in spite of everybody else who was trying to run into you, run over you, or run you off the road because you used your perception. So if we can get over the word prophecy and look at that as perception, and I'm not trying to change the context of the Bible, but I'm trying to put it in usable terms that we can understand. If we look at the gifts that we have, perception, serving, teaching, encouraging, giving, leading, these are the things that we need to focus upon. Now to do that, let's start with Colossians 3. No need for me to read this. You all know what Colossians 3 says. In short, it says the simple thing that Lieutenant Gerber said. He said, today we work for God. We got to remember, we work for God. We're servants because of Christ. With this scripture in mind, I want to give you a few thoughts of things that we can do maybe to help us improve our abilities to draw others to us while we're in the workplace. First thing we need to do is we need to examine ourselves. You need to look at yourselves and take a really good hard look of what we see. Do people see me as self-centered? How do I bring Christ to the workplace? What do I do? What can I do? Or am I leaving me at home? Can I see that? Do I pray at the workplace? Do I pray before I eat? Do I pray for others? Am I the first one who's asked to lead a prayer? How can I change me? What can I do so I can bring God with me as opposed to leaving him at home in my pocket or in the car? What can I do? Do people see Jesus reflected in what I do? Are the actions that I put out the same actions that Jesus would put forth? Can I take opportunities to turn my work arena into a Christ-filled moment? Can I find those? But how do you do that? How do you do that? Let's just be simple. Let's be real. This is not hard. People, especially people, and I'm going to use some terms that sometimes we shy away from, especially people who are millennials, the people who are in the workforce, the people who are 18 to 34, these folks like realism. They like honesty. They like to know your faults. They like to know what you're good at. If you want to draw others to Christ, we've got to start with reality. Oftentimes, we get into a situation where we can't admit our struggles. Sometimes that comes across as that we don't have any problems. That's not real. We've got to be real. If you want to draw others to you, be real. It's easier to change yourself than it is 250 folks. As unpleasant as it may seem to us, people want to know that we're not perfect. They want to know that we're fallible. This one sometimes we don't have problems with. You can be ethical and be outstanding. Do what you're good at as Christians. Watch your language. Show up for work on time or early. Don't participate in crude jokes. Be positive. It's okay to be the cheerleader. It's okay to encourage people. Refrain from caustic attitudes and gossip. Boy, that's a tough one in the work environment. Be as smart as possible with what you're tasked to do. And when you master what you're tasked to do, help your coworker master theirs. Because all of a sudden, you're a team player. Give the employer a good value for their money. Make sure when they look at you that they go, you know, that's the best employee I got, and I still can't figure out why. You and I know the answers because how they're raised and where they go to church and what they've studied. If at all possible, be a good value. This is the toughest one right here. Respect boundaries and respect policy. In other words, respect boundaries or avoid trips to the human resources department for re-indoctrination. Generally, and I'm going to say, those of you who have walked that walk before, generally, I say things that I probably shouldn't. We should probably avoid things like, you know, I'll pray for you. And that's terrible to say in this day and time, but the fact of the matter is, policies are written to prohibit that. You can still do that in different ways. Ask if there's any way that you can help. Is there a way I can help? You know, we have a prayer group at our church. We might be able to include your name on that. You can offer. But the other things you can do is you can do what we're good at. You can be genuine. Have pure motives. Don't sniff the air for sin as sometimes we've done when we walked into places. There's sin in here. I got to go. If that would have been the attitude of Jesus and the 12, they would have never gone anywhere because sin was everywhere. Be hopeful. Find good in situations. Be an encourager. Be righteous. And when I say righteous, I don't mean self-righteous. I mean speak impartially. Be faithful. Show up on time and be counted. Be a team player. Be relational. Show love. Show love in word and deed. I got a half a minute. I'm going to probably go over a minute. Find ways to comfort, encourage, and listen to others. Because by doing those things that Jesus did, those things that the 12 did, we're going to be a better employee. And finally, just be it. I heard just do it earlier. Just be it. That's sort of a tough concept. 1 Corinthians 3, 6 and 7. What? I planted, Apollos watered. Who granted the increase? God. All you can do is do. Do your part. Remember 1 Corinthians 3, 6 and 7. Live your faith by example, not words. Make sure that you're doing before you're saying. That's tough. I get it. You know, there are times in law enforcement, as you can imagine, the cleanest of language does not flow through our building. And every now and then, do I get caught up in that once in a while? And I stop and I'll go back and I'll go, guys, I'm sorry. I said something I never say and I apologize. You got to be willing to do that. You got to let folks know you're human if you're going to be Christian. Things that people see in you, kindness, compassion, caring, love, respect. Those are the things that are going to draw people to you in your workplace and let you lead them to Christ. And finally, if you look at James 2, when we're talking about the faith, James 2 in two words is God simply saying, show me. When we walk into the workplace, God is saying, show me. And I'm going to start it, I'm going to end where I started. God says, show me. Lieutenant Commander Gibber says, remember we work for God. Take that with you in the workplace. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your attention. I appreciate the invitation. Sorry for the extra 45 seconds. Unfortunately, I can't stay. I meant to say this earlier. I hate to speak and run, but my father-in-law, oddly enough, is being inducted into his high school sports hall of fame this afternoon at 4:30 in the city of Radford. So I've got to drive 3 hours before my wife decides that I need to sleep in the doghouse tonight. Thank you all.